Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Top of the hour is being brought to you by DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. And this hour is being brought to you by Lakeside Bank. With the power of Lakeside Bank, it's about time. Ray, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Let's go now. You fire the first shot. Let's go, man.
Jason Leisure.
I'm here in the studio at The Score. This is a very, very special honor for you.
Co-host of the Sports Adjacent podcast.
I don't really like doing the radio, man.
Yes.
I don't like doing sports radio like the typical. That's why I've wanted to be on your show, because your show is, interesting.
His takes will leave you speechless.
It feels like there is some hateration and holleration in the century, because I do feel like Jason and Tony, there's a little bit of hate there.
I'm not sure what holleration means. I'll just be upfront with that. I can figure out hateration. I'm not sure about holleration.
Jason Leisure on the Lawrence Holmes Show on The Score.
Jason Leisure joins me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, some of the world's largest sports book. You can also read Jason Leisure in the Sun Times. And he's nice enough to join us. Oh, by the way, the Sports Adjacent podcast is terrific. You should subscribe and you should give it a rating. And you should know the type of hijinks that goes on there. And I think that some of the score listener got a taste of it yesterday, Mr. Leisure. I don't know if you were listening. You probably weren't. You're busy. You're taking care of your kids, like all that good stuff. Your partner in crime, Russ Dorsey, was on the show yesterday. He, too, like you, was on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. He did not have sleeves on yesterday when he did his appearance.
No, you know how, like, Vince Carter was half man, half amazing, and Charles Barkley called Kyrie Irving half man, half a season. Russ is half man, half a shirt.
That is very accurate. And even in his sit down with Jazz Chisholm, he's got, you know, at least two, probably three buttons unbuttoned on his button up shirt.
Hey, he's been looking a little bit like Jerry Buss lately.
That's a good call. Oh my God. He's black Jerry Buss. That actually makes a lot of sense that he is the black Jerry Buss.
Let's not go that far.
I mean,
but clothing-wise.
Clothing-wise, but you guys did accuse him on the podcast of having the moment in the car with the nurse saying that he might use sympathy to get some things that he wants. That happened.
But see, but Russ is a good-looking guy. He's in great shape. He works out constantly. Like, if I looked like Russ, I'd probably never wear a shirt. I'd be allergic to shirts, too.
A texter correctly has now come up with a nickname for him. He's now Jerry Russ.
There we go.
So take that back to the podcast and have some fun with it.
We talk so much about Winning Time because all three of us love that show. I've never asked you. I assume that you like it, but I've never asked you about it now that I think of it. And Tony and I were having this kind of, like, one time we were waiting for Russ to come on a call, and Tony and I were having kind of this, like, awkward conversation of, like, which one of us, once we first got going on this show on watching Winning Time, which one of us is going to be the first one to tell Russ that Magic Johnson reminds us a lot of him? And we were both like, let's not do it. And then Russ did it. Russ came out and said it.
Yep. I enjoy the show. Bernstein and I actually usually once a week we'll talk about it because he's really into the show too. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually hoping I've been working on getting Sally Richardson Whitfield, who's one of the directors. She's from Chicago. She's a fantastic actress who's turned into a director. She directed, I want to say, the last episode, and I want to try and get her on the show because I dig it. And what's weird is, what I find fascinating is I think that all of the particulars that are upset with how they're being depicted on the show only watch the first episode. Because I think that the way that Kareem has been depicted on the show going forward, I think Kareem would be okay with that depiction of how he was sensitive to what was going on with Spencer Haywood, and that he offered him chance after chance to try and make this whole thing work, and how dedicated he was to trying to do things the right way and teach Magic Johnson about the world. Same thing with Jerry West. Jerry West's character has evolved throughout this show, and it makes me laugh that Jerry West is doing stuff now that you would expect the character Jerry West to do.
Yes.
Talking about he's going to take things to the Supreme Court.
Yes, he's almost like living up to the caricature that they've done of him. I'm a total hypocrite on this entire show, man, because I love watching the show. I love that they have fictionalized it and dramatized it. But I also, if I was one of several people being depicted on the show, would not like it.
Is there any one of the characters that you think should like the way that they're being depicted?
Pat Riley comes off looking pretty good. I mean, at every turn, Pat Riley comes off as the one guy that is that knows what's going on a lot of the time. But I don't think that, like, some of the stuff, like, okay, you could make a depiction of me and you could make it true and there'd be some things I don't like. There's some things that are actually correct about me that I'm like, that's not the attribute about me that I'm proudest of or that I enjoy the most or would want people to see in a TV show. But, like, you know, Chick Hearn, does his family love how he's portrayed on there? You know,
I can't imagine that they do.
Paul, Jerry Buss's family, like Magic Johnson, like, I'm sure all of these guys that say they haven't seen it, I'm sure they know. I'm sure they actually have seen it or they've been told what's in it. And the stuff that's true and the stuff that's exaggerated or fictionalized, like, I wouldn't love being portrayed the way a lot of the people on the show are being portrayed. But hypocritically, I love the show, and I love that they are not doing Last Dance. I love that it's dramatized and fictionalized and kind of spiced up for TV. That's what we want to see.
Who plays you? Who do we get to play you?
Who plays me? Jeez. Who's a bald guy?
I was going to say Jason Statham. Be like perfect.
Yeah, there you go. Jason Statham in a beard. There we go.
I think you might be taller than him, too. So.
Wow. Okay.
Something to keep in mind. I'm glad that we got to talk Winning Time, but obviously, since you cover the Bears, I would like to ask you your thoughts on the Bears. What did you think of what they did in the draft?
That's a really tough question because I view everything about the Bears right now through the lens of working up to 2023. And I don't think the Bears are tanking, certainly, but it's clear that the priority is 2023, not this season. So I think if you're Ryan Poles, you're looking at the collective cap space and the collective set of draft picks for this year and next year leading up to, hey, problems have been solved once we start the 2023 season. So if you're giving him this year's draft picks and next year's draft picks to solve all those problems, then he took care of some things that they needed to take care of with those second round picks. That being said, I think one of the potential flaws in that plan is Fields needs help immediately. You need it now. You cannot have him languish through whatever kind of offensive line and receivers and tight end that he's got to play with. You need to surround him with the things that he needs. You need to treat him like he's a franchise quarterback right now, even though he hasn't proven that he is. I think the way to get him there is to treat him like he's a franchise quarterback and supply him with everything he wants and not just go bargain shopping for receivers and free agency.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about because I'm in this place and I'm a little bit stuck. You wrote about it earlier this week and you were talking about the concept of roster repair. The Bears have to do a complete roster repair. I'm not even sure people outside of Chicago, I think most Bears fans now realize how bad the 53 or 63-man roster that the Bears had was the last two seasons. How bad was this problem? And then I'll follow up with the existential Bears crisis that I'm having.
Well, it's really bad. And, you know, when you say people outside Chicago, you're not sure if they realized. No, I can assure you that they didn't realize because no one was paying attention to this team for the last couple of years. This team was completely irrelevant. It was like when you're watching TV and some random Jaguars game comes on, Jaguars, Texans, and you're like, oh, I forgot these teams existed. That's what it's like for the rest of the country when the Bears come on Sunday night or Thursday night football. They are not a nationally followed team right now. And it's partly because of the losing, and it's partly because of it's so dull. It is so unwatchable on Sundays. As far as how bad off the roster was, take a look at what's left of the roster. Take a look at what they've got right now. I'll give you Roquan Smith, Justin Fields, and Darnell Mooney, Jalen Johnson. There's four guys. Anybody else after that that you'd cry if they got rid of? Anybody else that would hurt if you saw him walk out the door? No. And it didn't. And with Mac, you know, he's still a really good player. He's still probably a Pro Bowl or all pro level player, but I don't know if he was going to be able to maintain that until their next good team. So that wasn't really worth keeping. I mean, you don't see a lot here that you're like, boy, we really need to make sure this guy's still on the team in 2024.
Okay, so let me go back to something you were talking about. We're talking with Jason Leisure, who covers the Bears for the Sun-Times, the Sports Adjacent podcast you should check out. You should subscribe and rate it. Give it 5 stars because it's awesome. The issue that I have is trying to figure out what to take from this and whether the right way to go about helping Justin Fields is by making the rest of the roster better. Is there an argument to be made that if the team itself is better, then Justin Fields is better?
Yeah, definitely. But what kind of game do you want to play here? Do you want to play, try to score 16 points and then just pray that's enough? I mean, that's enough of that for the last few years. I think that anything you do to improve the roster does help him. A better defense helps Justin Fields, yes. But I also think you need to give him things that are going to allow him to flourish individually. And while there's an indirect benefit to fixing the secondary, for example, that's not as helpful to you or to him as giving him a bunch of good receivers and a good offensive line.
So then how do they go about evaluating him next year? And maybe you're right. Like, maybe what we're talking about is Justin Fields year three. That's the true evaluation. But then when you start looking at the draft in next season, you go, well, that's probably more of a quarterback draft than this past year. But maybe as good of a quarterback draft as we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years. So how do you go about evaluating Justin Fields if you aren't providing him with some of the things that he needs offensively?
It's extremely difficult. And Ryan Poles talked about trying to evaluate his rookie season, and he said it's cloudy, I believe was the word that he used. It's cloudy to evaluate that because of everything that was going wrong there. And you could make a list of all the things that were working against Justin Fields last year. You could include on that list Matt Nagy's dysfunctional offense. You could include on that list Ryan Pace's bad decisions personnel-wise that left them with that offensive line and those skill players. You could include the instability of going, you know, of having Andy Dalton in there, and so Fields spends a lot of the time on second team, and it's not really clear, you know, who's the guy, who's not the guy. And then when he does get in, the offense, not only is it dysfunctional in general, but totally ill-suited for him. And those would all be valid problems. And Ryan Poles would sit here and tell you, we've solved all of those problems. Those problems are done. Like, we've got the right people picking players. We've got the right offense going. We've got you at the center of it, Justin Fields. It's not trying to figure out whose team it is or anything like that. But that's not the full list of problems. That list of problems continues into doesn't have a good offensive line, doesn't have really good dynamic receivers that are going to bail him out. Not sure if they've got a tight end. Not sure if they've got a running game. Those things haven't necessarily been fixed on paper to me. Maybe Ryan Poles is right. Maybe you get in there and say, oh, Lucas Patrick did change everything about their offensive line. Byron Pringle at 28 or 29, whatever he is, actually is still an ascending player. Equanimeous St. Brown is the guy the Packers were sleeping on. Turns out he's really good, too. Maybe Ryan Poles is right about all that. That takes a lot of faith. That I don't see it on paper today. That would take a lot of faith. So if this is still an imperfect situation for Justin Fields, how are you evaluating that? And it's not that we don't. It's not that we wait till 2023 to evaluate him. That doesn't really make sense. And again, it's like the whole thing about looking at it as 2023 is the priority. It doesn't mean this season's irrelevant. This season is relevant in the way that it builds up to next season, both collectively for the Bears and with Justin Fields. And you, I don't know how you're going to be able to evaluate, is he doing things right when he doesn't have any open receivers or he doesn't have any time in the pocket? How are you going to make any evaluation on that?
What are the things that Justin Fields has said about where things stand with him right now? Like the things that he learned from last year's experience that he feels are valuable going into this season?
Well, I'll give him a lot of credit. He's very professional. As a very young player, very inexperienced player, he's very professional. He has not taken any even subtle shots, I don't think, at the way things were last season at Matt Nagy or Ryan Pace or the players they put around him or just the whole setup of last year. But you can tell the way he talks about this season, you know, reading between the lines, the way he talks about Luke Getsy and Matt Eberflus and this coaching staff and the situation he's in now is the clear number one quarterback, the guy who is taking control of the team. He feels comfortable with that. He feels comfortable out there running the offense, running things in the mini camp they had a couple weeks ago as though this is his team now. And he hasn't really earned that with his play, but that's the role they need him to play. So the sooner he is dressed for the job that you want, not the job that you have. And so I think he is doing that. He is taking charge, and I think he does feel a lot more comfortable. I think that's the vibe I get from him every time he talks since the coaching change, is just much more comfortable.
Okay, that's a really, really good thing. Jason Leisure of the Sun-Times joining me here on The Score. Of the guys that the Bears drafted, is there one that in particular that you think is interesting?
Well, Velus Jones is interesting. Everybody was upset about that pick, the third-round wide receiver, but it's certainly an interesting pick. You're betting on a guy that is older than Darnell Mooney when he comes in. I think he's turning 25 next month. Is that right? Or this month?
That's correct.
This week he's turning 25. You get in trouble when you start thinking that you know something that the other 31 teams don't. That was Ryan Pace's problem all along. Maybe Ryan Poles is right about Velus Jones, and he turns out to be a really quality piece. He doesn't have to be a star, but when you look at the best teams in the league, when you look at the teams that were in the Super Bowl last year, for example, the Rams and the Bengals, those guys are loaded at receiver, both of them. Both of them had three guys that are probably better than anyone the Bears had last season, including Darnell Mooney. So you need an arsenal of receivers. You need three to four guys. Darnell Mooney is not going to be your number one, but he can be one of your four. Maybe Velus Jones develops into one of your four for 2023, but you still need that number one. You still got to find that. And I don't think you find that in the third round. I think that's what a lot of people were upset about. You know, picking a cornerback right away, that makes sense. I mean, that is a massive problem. But picking a safety, picking Brisker with the second round pick, I think that's where a lot of people kind of started to fret over Ryan Poles' draft.
Okay, but he's saying that this obviously like can't be fixed overnight and that he probably needs more drafts. Should we be impressed that he turned six picks into 11?
Not really. I mean, most of those picks are what? Eight of those picks are fifth, sixth, seventh round. I mean, that doesn't really mean a lot. Those picks are low percentage picks. Sometimes you find really good players there, like Darnell Mooney in the fifth round. You know, I like that move only in the sense of it shows the humility of realizing you need to play the odds in the draft. Rather than thinking, oh, I know something. All of these other 31 teams, Lawrence, with massive staffs and analytics and film that have been working for months, I'm the one that knows. I know that this sixth-round pick is going to be the guy, and no one else knows it. That's ridiculous. But saying, hey, this is all very random, and none of us can predict this, so I want as many chances as I can take. I want 11 draft picks so I can just, you know, take as many shots as I possibly can. That's very prudent. That's how you end up, you know, they're low percentage picks, like I said. Well, if you take eight shots and you hit a low percentage, that's one or two guys. I mean, you'll take that.
Mr. Leisure, I appreciate your time. So now you get like kind of a break, right? With the Bears.
No. First off, a break is an interesting word to use because my days that I don't work are busier than the days that I do work. Today, I'm supposedly not working, and I'm trying to help my 11-year-old daughter make tiramisu, which I've never made, and off to a bad start. We're already going to have to go after this phone call and redo part of what we already did. But the Bears are about to start rookie minicamp this week. They're going to have OTAs. They're going to have full-on minicamp in June. It's really not till about mid-June that everything quiets down.
All right, well, I'll leave you alone on the show. Unless you want to come and hang out, I'll leave you alone until we get to, like, June-ish, July-ish.
Well, this is always fun. I'm always up for this.
I think the people would like to know how the tiramisu turns out, so please tweet that if you can.
Okay, all right. Or I'll just hope everybody forgets about it if it doesn't turn out good.
Well, even if it doesn't look great, it might taste great. That happens all the time when you're trying new stuff out.
Well, that wouldn't matter on Twitter. On Twitter, I would need it to look great.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. That's a good point. Well, good luck with it. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Break an egg. Yeah! Woo! Yeah!
Are you proud of that?
I crushed that dad joke. I crushed it.
Yeah, you did. You did.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy.
That is Jason Leisure of the Sun Times and the Sports Adjacent Podcast. Please, please subscribe and give it a 5-star rating. It's really good. It's him, it's Russ, it's Tony, and they are excellent. So thanks to him for joining us. Okay, so here's what we've done so far. We have done a ton of football. We've broken down the Bears from a film standpoint, from a betting standpoint, and from a reporting standpoint. There's some baseball that I want to do. I want to talk about the series between the Cubs and the White Sox, and I want to talk about the White Sox, whether this feels like the start of something or whether you're still skeptical. I'll discuss that with you next here on The Score.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-thru burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
It's time for the White Sox Minute.
Tim crushes this ball. He throws the bat. The ball goes flying. It is gone.
We're going to be South Side regardless.
South Slider.
Hi, Mom!
Go Sox, babe.
The White Sox Minute on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
Lucas Giolito and Kyle Hendricks, a tremendous pitching matchup for this evening in game number 2.
As that ball is tattooed into left field, Happ is back at the track and the wall, and he's not going to get there. Into the basket, 1-0 Sox. And Leury Garcia hits his ball high in the air, right center field. Hayward is back, and this ball gets out of here. Garcia carries it up and out. Wrigley is a launching pad tonight, and it's 3-2. On the ground and through. Two-strike poke to tie the game for Gavin Sheets. A.J. in the air, right center field, falling down. A parachute through the cold May evening, and it's 4-3. Sox, 2-2, one more time. That's strike three, and the Sox will leave with a sweep in hand.
Highlights courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago. Jason Benetti and Steve Stone on the call. It's weird. Lucas Giolito had a three-outcome start. He was either striking people out, getting the ball hit hard, or walking people. It's very bizarre. Because there were times in that game where he looked like he was in complete command, and then you see Nico Hoerner like say, yaka tow, back to the wall in left field. To the window! Lucas talked about the home runs that were given up and whether he feels like things are moving in the right directions for him and the White Sox.
I was responsible for two of those, and I know why they happened. Had a good first inning, the second inning, just not commanding the fastball to the top of the zone. I mean, for me, that's my bread and butter. If I throw the fastball to the top, then I'm going to have success with it, and I'm going to be able to play my other pitches off it really well. But it's kind of all over the place in my heater, missing down, missing middle, and I got burned there. A couple good swings by them. Recognized that and really made it a priority the rest of the outing to get the fastball up, and led to a lot more swing and miss, a lot more success. So a bad taste in my mouth walking the last guy, but like I said, Ronaldo came in, got the job done, and we just kept going from there. Despite that tough stretch there, we didn't lose faith. We knew we were very, very close, and I really think that last inning, it's a game we lost against the Angels. That last inning when we put up like four or five, that was kind of the turning point where it's like we collectively as a group, we're like, enough of this. We can play such better baseball. We know how to string hits together. We know how to play clean defense. And so that was kind of that turning point. Even though we lost that game, since then, just higher energy, just being in the moment, highly focused on execution. So we just keep it rolling from there.
Man, I hope that he's right. I hope that moment where he says they kind of collectively said enough is enough and then they score five runs against the Angels was a jumping off point. There's also an argument to be made that in the case of the two games they played against the Cubs, that they're bump slaying. And that even in those games, they only tallied seven runs. And if you look at the games that they played against the Angels, where you start thinking this offense still is problematic. We'll get a better idea. Not that the Red Sox are that much better than the Cubs right now, but we'll get a better idea starting tomorrow when they take on the Red Sox. By the way, Friday's game for the White Sox is on Apple TV Plus. You do not need a subscription, at least for now, to be able to watch tomorrow's game. In yesterday's game, Matt Foster was amazing. He was put in a situation that looked horrible, and it looked like the White Sox were going to lose control of the game. He came in and was spectacular. Here's what Lucas Giolito said about the resurgence of Matt Foster as a back of the bullpen guy.
The adjustments he's made from last year, it's unbelievable. Last year, he knew what needed to improve, and this game is so tough because sometimes like you can't just make that adjustment like immediately. Whereas this year he's come out, he has He's added two pitches to his repertoire. The slider's really, really good. The curveball. He's riding his fastball. I mean, it's such a good feeling to see that he took the bull by the horns, and now he's back, you know, doing what he can do.
Hopefully that continues, because they still have some time before Joe Kelly is available to them. Aaron Bummer is still not quite right, and it's concerning. Like, what concerns me most about him is his issues with control. Yesterday he gave up a couple of hits, but it's the ball one. Like, that's where I get concerned with Aaron Bummer, and he missed with some. He had a couple of sinkers that were up, and as Steve Stone pointed out, that's not good. That's not really how that's supposed to work. So that's that series from the perspective of the White Sox. Ray, hit him with the Cubs Minute.
It's time for the Cubs Minute.
Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air.
Fly the W!
Wrigleyville fans are awesome. Great food. It's, you know, it's tough to beat.
Cubbies. The Cubs Minute on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
It's game two of this brief two-game series between the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. 0-for-3 last night, drives one in the air, deep left field. Back is Happ near the fence, at the wall. It's gone for a home run. Jose Abreu with a two-out solo home run, and the White Sox take a 1-0 lead.
Here's the 3-1.
Swung on, hit in the air, deep left field. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Nico Hoerner with a missile to the seats in left. And the Cubs lead 2-1
of the Detroit Tigers.
There's a deep drive to left by Wisdom. That ball is gone. Line drive, home run to left. Wisdom with a rocket. And the Cubs lead 3-1.
Garcia drives one to right center. Pretty well hit. Long run. This ball's back to the wall and gone for a home run.
Swinging a fly ball, shallow right center. Racing out, Madrigal cannot make the catch. It's a base hit. And the White Sox have taken the lead.
Peers out over third and brings it.
Strike three called, and the ball game is over. White Sox sweep the two-game series.
Highlights courtesy of the Score. Pat on the call. Cubs are now 9-15 after that 4-3 loss. They have lost 6 out of their last 8. And a decision on what happens with this team, I think, it'll be more evident after the middle of this month. So there's some hope. Like, there's some hope that they can get out of where they're at right now, because they have a 14-game stretch in the middle of this month where they play D-backs, Pittsburgh, D-backs, Cincinnati. That's before they play the Sox again at the end of the month. But you would hope that things would get better for the Cubs overall before that takes place, because they've got some holes. Like, there's some great moments. Like, Nico Hoerner, like, muscling up on Lucas Giolito was pretty awesome. And I hope that he is turning into the player that a lot of people were expecting. Like, not just someone who's good defensively, but is starting to show off all of that hard work that he did on his body to get stronger. And it definitely looked like it with the home run that he had. They got a couple of hard hit balls on Giolito, but when they had a chance to get this game back even with nobody out and what runners on first and third, they weren't able to do anything with it. And that's not good. Hendricks's line is weird. 5 2/3, 7 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 homers. I don't think he pitched poorly. He doesn't think that he pitched poorly either.
Just 2 mistakes, I think, that they didn't miss, took advantage of. But other than that, I mean, I'm looking for consistency, so I got to build on what I did. But I thought I made a lot of good pitches, especially late in the game there. Really got into my mechanics, felt good angle on some fastballs, bad contact, kept the pitch count down, getting ahead of guys. So yeah, just gotta keep on going.
How it felt like early in the game, there's a lot of pop-ups, and then really from the fourth inning on, just like all ground ball outs. Mm-hmm. Is there adjustments that you felt or made in game
just got more into what I was trying to do. Yeah, more angle, more down in the zone. Early, they were just really trying to jump me. So a lot of those were on some changeups. So they were just really out front and got under. So they were still good pitches, you know. Really, like I said, just the two mistakes that they jumped on were right over the heart of the plate. Other than that, it was fastballs at the bottom of the zone, went up when I needed to, threw a lot of good curveballs in some good spots. So I just got to take those positives and not look at those results.
Baseball, you know,
I've
some hard balls,
right? Yeah, 100%, man. That's a pretty frustrating one. I thought we played pretty well, made some good plays out there, put together great at-bats, had some chances there late, and yeah, just hit balls right at guys. It's just one of those things. Yeah, that's a baseball day.
When you see that ball come off college bat, or you think, I got the weak contact, I wanted, and then you're watching Nick try and sprint after it.
Yeah, the Sheets won the inning before, and then Pollock right there. That's executing pitches and getting what I want. So, yeah, that's just baseball. Can't control the result. I just got to keep making pitches like that, and I'll be where I need to be.
I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about, you know, having the rough April night or end of May. You're going to, like you usually do, hit the certain pitch better. Do you think you had the stuff that you would be looking for to do that tonight?
100%. Yeah, that was definitely more on track. It wasn't like those two bad games I had in April. It was more along the lines of the good ones I had. Just like I said, establishing my fastball down and away, had good angle, getting balls on the ground, bad contact. So I need to just keep focusing on those good things and move with that.
So that was what Kyle Hendricks said about his performance. Cliff Floyd was on the post game on Marquee. He had some things that he thought could make Hendricks better going forward.
The one thing with Kyle, though, Cole, I would say is his curveball is incredible.
Okay.
I mean, you know, when you don't see him consistently and then all of a sudden, you know, you start working and you're watching the games and you dive in deep and you're thinking, man, I need Willie to call that more. I need him
absolutely
to feel, you know, and understand that that curveball is dirty and guys are taking it because they can't hit it. So when you watch him say he threw a couple curveballs, I would like that number to be 10, 11, mm-hmm. especially when guys are trying to ambush him. So he's speaking to understanding what hitters are trying to do. So he's going to all what, that's how he makes his living.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 85, 86, but it's darting all over the place. He pitches like the former, you know, Cub and Greg Maddux, Hall of Famer. Because Greg Maddux, you go up there thinking one way, he's totally thinking the opposite. That's how Kyle Hendricks makes a living.
Yeah.
But when you see something working, and I'm thinking to myself today, I'm watching going, more curveballs. They already know the other couple pitches, the one that darts off the table, the one that cuts a little bit, you know, the one that dips off. But what about the big 12-6? What about the slurvy curveball that has success? Tonight, I wish I saw a little bit more of that.
And we had Rossi on, and he was talking about sometimes when he doesn't have feel for pitches, those pitches will flatten out, and they did in certain cases, and you saw Abreu take advantage of it. Overall, I didn't think he was too bad. The problem is he and Stroman have to be great if this team is going to do anything this season. There's that middle of the month that you can look forward to. Arizona twice, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. You got 14 games against them. You might need to go like 12-2 inside of there to give Cubs fans hope about what happens this season. And then if there isn't anything, you could start talking about just the development stuff. I see the Cubs fans got a whiff of the running stylings on base of Nick Madrigal yesterday. And I know that Luis Robert caught the ball, but you saw Nick Madrigal doing Nick Madrigal-like things on the base paths. You're going to see more of it, too. When we come back, usually I kind of wrap up the show in the last segment. I'm going to cede my time to someone who's more creative, especially with the numbers, than I am. Next, here on The Score.
Yo, Holmes!
Lawrence Holmes.
Holmes runs it really well.
Noon to 2.
Holmes doing what Holmes does.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yo, Holmes!
And 670thescore.com. In Odyssey Station.
There's been a lot of talk today on The Score about numbers and heat maps and trying to get as many pieces of data that you can to make good decisions. Well, I decided that I was going to cede my time to the only person whose numbers I trust. Hit it, Ray.
Scott Steiner, it's going to be a three-way.
TNA heavyweight title at Sacrifice between you, Kurt Angle, and Samoa Joe. Now, before you get there, you have an important step tonight as you and X Division champion Petey Williams take on the unlikely duo of Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe.
You know, they say all men are created equal, but you look at me and you look at Samoa Joe, and you can see that statement is not true. See, normally if you go one-on-one with another wrestler, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm a genetic freak, and I'm not normal. So you got a 25% at best at beating me. And then you add Kurt Angle to the mix, your chances of winning drastically go down. See, the three-way at Sacrifice, you got a 33 1/3 chance of winning. But I got a 66 2/3 chance of winning because Kurt Angle knows he can't beat me, and he's not even going to try. So Samoa Joe, you take your 33 1/3 chance minus my 25% chance, and you got an 8 1/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. But then you take my 75% chance of winning, if we used to go one-on-one, and then add 66 2/3%, I got 141 2/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. See, Joe, the numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for you at Sacrifice. See, but I'm going to break it down for all you ladies. Would you rather be with me, or would you rather be with Joe?
Well, I think Joe's kind of nice. I mean, you know.
See, you're one of those girls that like romance. I'm going to talk to all my freaks out there. Would you rather come home to me, a genetic freak, to be satisfied every night, or go home to that fat-ass small Joe? See, tonight, we're going to win, and I'm going to be the world champion at Sacrifice. Come on, P, let's go.
Scotty, just like you always say, Big Papa Pump has got your hookup. Well, Maple Leaf Muscle is who you need to look up. Holler if you hear that.
It's the only math you'll ever need for the rest of your life. It's the only person I trust to break down the numbers. I'll talk with Parkins and Spiegel next here on The Score.
I'm going to talk to all my freaks out there.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-thru burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, Holmes!
Lawrence Holmes.
Holmes runs it really well.
Noon to 2.
Holmes doing what Holmes does.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yo, Holmes!
And 670thescore.com. In Odyssey Station.
There's been a lot of talk today on The Score about numbers and heat maps and trying to get as many pieces of data that you can to make good decisions. Well, I decided that I was going to cede my time to the only person whose numbers I trust. Hit it, Ray.
Scott Steiner, it's going to be a three-way TNA heavyweight title at Sacrifice between you, Kurt Angle, and Samoa Joe. Now, before you get there, you have an important step tonight as you and X Division champion Petey Williams take on the unlikely duo of Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe.
You know, they say all men are created equal, but you look at me and you look at small Joe, and you can see that statement is not true. See, normally if you go one-on-one with another wrestler, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm a genetic freak, and I'm not normal. So you got a 25% at best at beating me. And then you add Kurt Angle to the mix, your chances of winning drastically go down. See, the three-way at Sacrifice, you got a 33 1/3 chance of winning. But I got a 66 2/3 chance of winning because Kurt Angle knows he can't beat me, and he's not even going to try. So, Samoa Joe, you take your 33 1/3 chance minus my 25% chance, and you got an 8 1/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. But then you take my 75% chance of winning if we used to go one-on-one, and then add 66 2/3%, I got a 141 2/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. See, Joe, the numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for you at Sacrifice. See, but I'm going to break it down for all you ladies. Would you rather be with me, or would you rather be with Joe?
Well, I think Joe's kind of nice. I mean, you know.
See, you're one of those girls that like romance. I'm going to talk to all my freaks out there. Would you rather come home to me, a genetic freak, to be satisfied every night, or go home to that fat-ass small Joe? See, tonight, we're going to win, and I'm going to be the world champion at Sacrifice. Come on, P, let's go.
Scotty, just like you always say, Big Papa Pump has got your hookup. Well, Maple Leaf Muscle is who you need to look up. Holler if you hear that.
It's the only math you'll ever need for the rest of your life. It's the only person I trust to break down the numbers. I'll talk with Parkins and Spiegel next here on The Score.
I'm going to talk to all my freaks out there.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.